Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is On Air Daily News for Wednesday, October 12, 2022. I'm Naima Latif. And our top story, a political consultant is suing a candidate for breach of contract. The Southland Journal reports that political consultant Wallace Gator Bradley, known as the Urban Translator, has filed a $20,000 lawsuit against Alexei Janulis, who is currently the Democratic nominee for Illinois Secretary of State, for breach of contract. Candidates running for office often seek the help of seasoned consultants to help them reach voters. But when such business agreements turn sour, how will this affect the candidate's image in the eyes of the voters? Well, according to the Southland Journal, Chicago political consultant and well-known urban translator Wallace Gator Bradley filed suit against Alexis Janulis and his campaign manager, Hannah Jubot. The complaint states that Bradley entered into an agreement with Janulis' campaign to provide political consulting duties. The original agreement between the parties was that Bradley was to be paid $5,000 per month beginning April 1st, 2022 and ending on June 28th, 2022, the Democratic primary. The agreement between the parties, the Southland Journal reports, was that if the Janulis campaign was victorious, the contract would extend to November 8, 2022. Bradley and Jubot, who was negotiating on behalf of and with the authority of Janulis, renegotiated the consideration to be paid Bradley as follows. One, a retainer fee of $4,000 to be paid to Bradley at the signing of this agreement, or a check made out to Bradley. Two, $3,000 on the first and no later than the third day of the month from May of 2022 until June of 2022 and increased to $5,000 and extended until November 2022 if we win the June 28, 2022 Democratic primary, which included any expenses Bradley might incur during the term of the campaign. Although defendant Hannah Jubot promised to sign and deliver the amended contract detailed in paragraph 3 to Bradley, she never did so, as reported by the Southland Journal. Regardless of Jubot's breach of promise to sign and deliver the amended contract detailed in paragraph 3 to Bradley, the parties engaged in a course of conduct consistent with the terms of the agreement set forth in the amended contract as follows. One, on April 12, 2022, Bradley was paid $4,000 by the Janulis campaign. Two, in May of 2022, Bradley was paid $3,000 by the Janulis campaign. Three, in June of 2022, Bradley was paid $3,000 by the Janulis campaign. Bradley diligently performed and continued to perform services pursuant to the contract. After winning the Democratic Party primary on June 28, 2022, defendants breached the agreement entered into between the parties by their failure to continue making the payments agreed upon to Bradley. Wherefore, plaintiff Wallace Bradley demands payment of $20,000 pursuant to the agreement entered into by the parties. This is a report published by the Southland Journal, and many who are running for office have issues when they are not able to follow through with financial agreements. It is a common situation during election time when those who are running for office have debts that need to be paid or agreements that need to be fulfilled. Well, on as far as Alexis Janulis, his background as a political figure is quite extensive. He is defined as an American financier and politician who served as the 72nd Illinois Treasurer from 2007 to 2011. A Democrat, Alexis Janulis defeated Republican candidate State Senator Christine Rodogno in November 2006 with 54% of the vote, becoming the first Democrat to hold the office in 12 years at age 30. Janulis was a candidate in the 2010 elections for the seat in the United States Senate held by Roland Burris. Burris, who was appointed by Governor Rod Blagojevich to fill the seat vacated by Barack Obama following Obama's election as President of the United States, chose not to seek election. Janulis won the Democratic primary in February 2010 and narrowly lost the general elections in November 2010 to Republican Mark Kirk. Subsequently, Janulis had mostly stepped back from public life, currently serving as senior director of BNY Mellon Wealth Management. On June 26, 2018, he was confirmed to the Chicago Public Library Board, marking his first return to public service since leaving the treasurer's office. Janulis is currently the Democratic nominee for Illinois Secretary of State in the 2022 election. Election news continues to highlight the news, as many who are running for office are hoping to get the endorsements of major groups and major constituent organizations in order to convince voters of their reliability. On Thursday, October 13th at 10 o'clock a.m., Dr. Willie Wilson, candidate for mayor of Chicago, will receive an endorsement from the Latino community. And this endorsement comes to Dr. Wilson, who has made his reputation as a humanitarian, businessman, and supporter of a multi-ethnic Chicago population. At the press conference announcing this endorsement will be mayoral candidate Dr. Willie Wilson, Apostle Jose Acevedo, Apostle Carlos Chica, Reverend Edward Laver, Reverend Hector Lort, Apostle Daniel Matos, Reverend Carlos Sanchez, Reverend Shando Valdez, Reverend Ruben Mendoza, Reverend Indy Samano, Reverend Antonio Serrano, Reverend Jose Vasquez, and Reverend Moses Zamudio, and Reverend Jose Alfaro. This will be held at 2552 West 21st Street at the New Vision Community Church in Chicago at 10 o'clock a.m. tomorrow, Thursday, October 13th. The Latino community has been struggling with high crime, high taxes, poor performing schools, and a mayor, they say, that does not care about them. Dr. Wilson says, "I recognize the importance of the Latino community to the fabric of our great city. I am honored to receive the endorsement of Latino faith leaders." And this endorsement comes as more candidates continue to step up their campaigns for mayor. The mayoral election, of course, is not until 2023. However, for those who are seeking financial support, the time is now to make a statement regarding their viability as a candidate. Reverend Jose Alfaro stated, "I support Dr. Wilson because he will bring the city to City Hall a level of moral and spiritual leadership that has been lacking. His courage, integrity, commitment to all communities, and concern for all of us justify our support." Dr. Wilson said, "I will be mayor for all the citizens. I will listen to your concerns and provide common sense solutions. Our city is stronger when we work together. I am very honored to have your support." And again, that press conference will be held Thursday, October 13th, 10 o'clock a.m. at 2552 West 21st Street at the New Vision Community Church. What are your opinions about endorsements? And do endorsements affect your belief about a candidate's viability? Do they increase a candidate's reputation as one who can be trusted? Does it increase the credibility? Does a particular endorsement encourage others from that same group, whether it be neighborhood, ethnic, religious? Does it encourage others to support a candidate? Give us a call with your thoughts at 515-605-9749. That's 515-605-9749. The question today is, does an endorsement sway your vote? Second question for today is, if a candidate is presented as having done something that is either misleading or in some way considered a breach of the law, does that affect your opinion? If a negative news story is printed about a candidate, such as being sued, does that affect your opinion about the candidate? Does it decrease their viability in your eyes? Does it decrease their credibility in your eyes? How are you affected by these news reports on the candidates? We'd certainly like to hear from you. Give us a call, 515-605-9749. And you can leave your comments on our Blog Talk page. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/onairdailynews. We want to hear your views. There are also a number of issues regarding the financial conditions that people express concern about and are asking elected officials to make some decisions. There are certainly those issues that could affect their well-being, their health, their opportunities for financial gain, especially those programs that many are hearing about that have to do with either grants or the awarding of some type of financial relief based on a person's qualifications. What does it take to qualify Well, that certainly is a question that many have asked. Yesterday was probably unknown to many as National Coming Out Day. And this new designation in October was something announced at the White House yesterday by White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, who gave a short introduction about her own experience coming out as part of the LGBTQ community. Many of those who have experienced reactions from family members, coworkers, and friends regarding their personal, intimate partners and life choices are relieved that this is a time that they can be more open. We'll share a bit of White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre's remarks regarding National Coming Out Day, which was Tuesday, October 11th. And her beliefs about what the recognition of this day represents for America.
The beauty of America is its freedom and the promise that you can achieve your dreams no matter your race, sex, country of origin, sexual orientation, or gender identity. This is something we continue to strive toward and fight for, particularly as we continue to see a wave of anti-LGBTQ legislation across the country. And it's why I'm so honored to serve the President and the First Lady, who have stood with the LGBTQ community for many years, and will continue to stand with all those who come out. And we are thinking about those who are coming out or those who are thinking about coming out. And we are here for you, and we will continue to support you. Thank you.
And Karine Jean-Pierre is an American political advisor who has served as the White House press secretary since May 13, 2022. She is the first black person and the first openly LGBTQ person to be the White House press secretary. She previously served as the deputy press secretary to her predecessor, Jen Psaki, from 2021 to 2022, and as the chief of staff for U.S. presidential candidate Kamala Harris during the 2020 presidential campaign. So that news story brings us to our third question for the day, and that is simply this: are we overly obsessed about sexual orientation in American culture? You can simply answer a yes or no to that question, and even give your opinions at www.blogtalkradio.com/onairdailynews. Are we overly obsessed about sexual orientation in American culture? Certainly that, for the most part, does not have anything to do with how a person does a job, but for those who have experienced discrimination or emotional reactions one way or another, that does beg the question as to why we are obsessing about that which has nothing to do with how a person does a job. Well, these are issues that continue to be of concern as we take a look at education and some of the ways that parents are seeking to address some of their concerns regarding the health and safety of their children, the expectation of schools to be able to keep our children safe from unexpected intruders, and even the spread of viruses and other illnesses that could be airborne or surface-borne, but seem to spread rapidly through schools when there is not a measure in place to protect the students. There continues to be a difference of opinion regarding the COVID-19 precautions, and parents are concerned that perhaps they should be thinking of alternative educational facilities, even if it means schooling at home. At the White House yesterday, there was an update regarding the rules, regulations, and requirements for COVID-19 vaccinations. And this, again, can be a sore spot for those in industries where they either are required or in places where their preference is to not partake in a shot. This was the announcement from yesterday's White House briefing.
With that, I now want to turn to our special guest for today. Today we have White House COVID-19 Response Coordinator, Dr. Shah, back with us in the room. He is going to discuss the benefits of the updated vaccines, the new vaccines that you have heard us talk about here, and our work to ensure that all eligible Americans do get vaccinated ahead of the winter. With that, Dr. Jha, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, KJP, and thank you for your personal story. Thank you all for having me back. Happy to be back here. I know families around the country are starting to make plans for Thanksgiving. Mine is. We're thinking about the holidays ahead. It's going to be here sooner than most people know. And we're all looking forward to a really good holiday season. The challenge with holiday seasons every year is it's also a time where contagious respiratory viruses like influenza, RSV, and again this year COVID spread much more quickly. And we have seen an increase in COVID infections, hospitalizations, and deaths each of the last two winters. And we are carefully monitoring the rise of several subvariants that are evolving rapidly and emerging around the world, including ones that evade some of our treatments. And given what we've seen in Australia this summer, our summer, their winter, it's reasonable to expect we're going to see a significant flu season this year. So we have some challenges ahead as we plan and as we look at the winter in front of us. But the good news is we are not helpless against these challenges, right? In fact, what happens in the weeks and months ahead will have a large impact on how the winter goes. And really what happens in this winter is largely up to us as the American people. So let me talk about what tools we have, what we can do to make sure we have a safe and healthy fall, winter, holiday season. We have updated bivalent vaccines that are designed to target the original version of COVID. I think you should see slides up. You do. Great. That target both the original version of COVID from 2020 as well as Omicron, the BA5 version that's circulating right now. And based on everything we know about immunology and science and and vaccines. These updated vaccines should provide a much higher level of protection against infection, against transmission, and certainly against serious illness and hospitalizations and deaths. And just like people get the flu shot each year, even if you've had the flu in the past or if you got a flu shot the year before, it's really critical that everyone 12 and older should go get this updated annual COVID-19 vaccine.
And that was from the White House briefing yesterday, October 11th. So now we have a fourth question that we want our listeners to consider, especially as we look at some of the side effects of the COVID-19 vaccines as reported by the World Health Organization. And some of those side effects are often felt by people who may already have pre-existing conditions. According to the World Health Organization, on a series explaining the vaccine and its development, the World Health Organization says mild to moderate side effects like low-grade fever or muscle aches are normal and not a cause for alarm. They are signs that the body's immune system is responding to the vaccine, especially the antigen, a substance that triggers an immune response and is gearing up to fight the virus. These side effects usually go away on their own after a few days. Common and mild or moderate side effects are a good thing. They show us that the vaccine is working. Experiencing no side effects doesn't mean the vaccine is ineffective. It means everybody responds differently. Like any vaccine, COVID-19 vaccines can cause side effects, most of which are mild or moderate, and go away within a few days on their own. As shown in the results of clinical trials, more serious or long-lasting side effects are possible. Vaccines are continually monitored to detect adverse events. Reported side effects of COVID-19 vaccines have mostly been mild to moderate and have lasted longer than a few days. No longer than a few days. Typical side effects include pain at the injection site, fever, fatigue, headache, muscle pain, chills, and diarrhea. The chances of any of these side effects occurring after vaccination differ according to the specific vaccine. So this is information put out by the World Health Organization. Our fourth question is, have you or anyone you know had more severe side effects to the vaccine? We want to know because we do want to consider if we're hearing it to be advocated that children the age of 12 and over be required to take the shot. We need to consider what our children and their growing and developing bodies are going to experience. Now, there is definitely a large population that has a very strong opinion, and we'd like to hear yours. Leave your comments at www.blogtalkradio.com/onairdailynews. Have you had, if you've taken the shots, a more severe reaction? And how do you feel about that? Did it make you hesitate to take your child for a shot? Well, that's all for now. Until tomorrow, I am Latif for On Air Daily News. Enjoy the rest of your day.